Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Lawrence, and I'm an alcoholic. I think we will move on now to our 25-minute speaker, and that is Chris.
Yeah, hi, I'm Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. It's a shame that happened to Kat. Thank you very much, Charles and Joe. From many of you, you've heard me share before, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't read and write, but this wasn't always the case. In my early primary school days, I did actually learn to read and write, but that was the time when I first came across alcohol, and it immediately had an effect which caused me to have an obsession about it, and my obsession was to get more. And I didn't really focus on anything else, no sports, no friends, no school, just how do I get more? Interestingly, the one thing I did find was that alcoholics do find each other when they're drinking. And I grew up in the middle of Dartmoor, and I found a bloke who must have been in his 70s, and I was probably 11 or 12. And I spent my days with this fella. And this fella was of my type. He just wanted more. And that's what we did. He died. I found another person like me who just wanted more. They died. And even though this was going on and my family were trying to help, doctors, school psychiatrists, they're all trying to help. And I can't understand why they're trying to help. In my view, their problem was that they didn't drink enough. That was a simple kind of conclusion. And that was my only view on life, was everybody should just get wasted and party. And I had this very peculiar kind of idea of what a party was. A party for me was something I never remembered. So I actually have no idea if I had a good time or did not have a good time. So, because I don't remember. It all started to really fall apart for me just walking down a street in Exeter. I did a bag snatch to get more. An old lady, she was quite old, but I was skinny, weak. I was living on the streets. You know, I'm pleading with her that I just need the money to get by for the next few days. And in the end, I end up getting arrested. And basically, she was stronger and faster than me, you know. And I got arrested, got put in a cell, and had my first experience of withdrawals. And that damaged my health for good. My first experience was full of fitting, and it was an awful, awful experience. And when they let me out, my first thought was to go back and get more. And it was not even a discussion in my mind. It was just go out and get more. My sentence was reduced to go to a facility that deal with the illness. I didn't know I was sick. And they told me, they said, do you know, there's a life that you can live without drinking. And I laughed. I laughed and thought, why would anybody want to stop drinking? Your problem is that you should not drinking enough. I still had that mentality. And it wasn't until I came out of there and had, I can't even call it a relapse because I was on medication at the time. It was just I came back out and I had a real massive destructive moment of drinking that brought me to my absolute knees. And somehow, somewhere in that facility, the kind people, I've got to say, the kind people in the hospital who always tried to help me, always pumped my stomach, the kind people, the police officers were kind. They showed me great kindness trying to help. You know, the judge showed me great tolerance, you know, and to give me a chance. And somewhere along that journey, I had heard about the fellowship. And I don't remember my first meeting. Don't remember how I got there. Have no recollection of that at all. I do remember when I got to the meeting, as other speakers had said, I was welcomed. And that made me cry. I broke. Something inside of me just cracked open and broke. And I would love to say that, you know, I would never have believed that actually on a Friday night I would be at a church hall or be on the internet. The internet wasn't around at the time, so it's not quite the same thing. But I sat on these plastic chairs, and I tell you, I hung on to them for my dear life, you know, and I didn't want to leave the meeting when the meeting came to an end. I was sat there when waiting for the meetings to start, and I used to hang out with him. Many of you might know him, Ben. And Ben and I basically just hung on to each other. You know, we were both frightened, not really having an idea of what was going on. But what was amazing, by going to those first few meetings, I did not drink, even though I had no idea what was going on. You know, the obsession actually had kind of vanished, and now I was holding on to these plastic chairs in the rooms of the fellowship. Now, they had the 12 steps and 12 traditions hanging up behind the people that were speaking. And I thought the people that were speaking were the bosses, you know, and that's just the way I looked at it. I couldn't read these steps, couldn't read these traditions, but I formed opinions on them. And the opinions were formed by the other people in this group. And this group spent an awful lot of time moaning and groaning and actually belittling other groups in the fellowship. And let me be very clear on this. If you go into a meeting and you're new and they're moaning and they're groaning and they're putting down another group, I recommend you go and try a different group straight away. And I didn't know any better. And I was brought to my first, the founding kind of meeting of the Road to Recovery, the Joys of Recovery, meeting by Ben. And at that time, we were probably about six strong, maybe six, ten people in that meeting. So smoky, you couldn't see anyone. I used to chain smoke nonstop. And went into that room and was stood in front of somebody who looked smart, looked like, I thought, how can you be an alcoholic? You're not a mess. I asked this person to sponsor me. And I did it very quietly, first of all. And you know, those that know Wayne knows that he isn't going to take a quiet request. He goes, can't hear you. And he said this three times. In the end, I'm like, please, will you sponsor me? I didn't understand what sponsorship was. He put some great ideas in my head. He said, are you willing to go to any lengths? Gave me a list of suggestions of what he needed me to do. He also told me unreservedly, I had nothing that he wanted, and I knew nothing worth knowing. That brought me to my first step, and the word surrender. And it's kind of becoming willing. Am I willing? I said, yes, I'm willing to go to any lengths. But what does that truly, truly mean? What does willing truly mean? You know, it means when I have no will. And I was at a point of having no will. No will at all. Not the will to go on, not the will to do anything. And by not having that will and stop fighting the steps, stop trying to conquer the steps and get knowledge from these steps from not actually doing them, you know, through osmosis, it's impossible. The only way I'm going to do this is to accept I have no will and voluntarily give myself to this program through this other alcoholic who's given it to me freely. I did that, and I lied to this fella quite a lot, as he would probably tell you. But he knew I was lying. And he knew that I told fibs about, you know, have you done your gratitude list? And I'm like, yeah, I've done my gratitude list. And, you know, I hadn't. I'd be like, I'll do it the next day. You know, and then he would just call me up on it and say, bring your gratitude list round. And I quickly have to scribble them all down and I'll just copy them over. And he would see that. And he took time to see that and said, Chris, this is just copying one day to the next. It's like you have to keep it in the moment. What are you grateful for in this moment? And he also said something quite interesting, which was also write down the things when you're not feeling grateful, write down the things that you know you should feel grateful for. And he was teaching me how to become honest. There was no need to lie to this man. There was no need to lie in his fellowship. There is no need for it. We are all average alcoholics. Predictable. I came to step four and he suggested that I started doing four resentment today in a list format. I didn't. And yet I told him I was doing it. And again, he called me out on it, you know, and I was like, you know, I'll do 4 and then I'll do 8 tomorrow, and then I'll do 12 the following day. He called me out on it, and quickly I scribbled it down, and I could only manage 1. And this one was about, out of resentment, this bloke who punched me in the face. So I wrote down, this bloke punched me in the face and that. And then I wrote an essay, basically, on why I was within my rights to have a resentment at this person for punching me in the face. Now, the facts of the situation was I punched him in the face first. So he was quite within his rights to punch me back. And my sponsor, again, took time and said, you haven't quite got the idea of this yet, Chris. You know, I just want the facts. I want the facts written down, your part in it, you know, how it affected you. And it's kind of, I don't want any more than that. And so if you're going to write in these big essays, you are taking your will back. You're not surrendered to the process yet. You're still trying to protect whatever you think is good from your past, your old behaviors. You're trying to justify them, protect them. And it was that complete giving myself to this program, accepting I had no will, and following the suggestions to the best of my ability. And the results were astounding. They were completely astounding. I got a flat, not a flat, I got a bedroom in a flat. And a really big moment for me in recovery was I went out and I bought a lampshade. And it sounds such a ridiculous thing, but for me, that was amazing. You know, I'd never bought a lampshade in my life. I've never bought anything apart from drink and drugs. That's all I've ever bought. And I went and spent money on something else. I also then, you know, made amends, made a list of people who I'd harmed, and I found that to be a really tough, tough step. And it was explained to me very simply, in the process is to walk in other people's shoes. And it's the first time that this program is no longer about me, it's actually about other people and the harm and destructive nature of the disease that I suffered from. And writing that list tore me apart, absolutely tore me apart to see what I had done. And I was disgusted and it made me cry. And again, my sponsor didn't take that. He said, Chris, it's not about you. You've somehow turned this about you. So you're feeling self-pity, shame, guilt. He said, it's not about that. This is about the other people for the first time. And I somehow got that. And I went and made my amends. And amazing things happened. People slammed doors in my faces. Other people just said, whatever. And other people were glad to hear it. One of the strongest parts of this was my grandfather. I made amends to him and he didn't say a word. And then 2-3 years later, he came up to me in his garden and he said, and he never hugged me, never kind of done any kind of affection. And he came and he grabbed me and he said, I am so proud of you. And he had waited for 3 years. It took 3 years to gain the trust of this man that I wasn't just giving it lots of speech and lots of promises that I wasn't keeping. He had seen the change in me. He had seen me put it into practice. I'm going to kind of, I don't know how I'm doing for time. Lawrence, am I okay?
Yeah, about 10 minutes. Yeah, left.
10 minutes, great. That's great. So coming to the point of the program of actually to give it away, first of all, I can only give it away if on a daily basis I am actioning very simple principles that this program has given me. People have said service and that, but a lot of it is when people aren't looking. You know, I can shine really brightly in a meeting and come across funny and great and all this and another, but when there's nobody looking, what am I doing? And the times I have hurt and suffered in recovery from trying to defend my own will again, you know, and I'm on my own, it's of my making. The solution is there to avoid these situations, and it's of my making. And I have learned that my shortcomings are completely of my making. And quite often, my pride was such that I would do something. It was a complete mess. Everything was going wrong. I'd fallen into this deep hole. I was still going to meetings and being a shining light, but actually I was in this big hole. And I was too proud to reach up and ask my sponsor or somebody else I trusted in the fellowship and go, I'm in this mess and I don't know what to do. And so I'd sit in this hole for a week or two. And then finally I'd ask somebody and they would straight away tell me, just do this, that and the other. And I would be out of it and things would get better. Then the following time, I'd walk into the same hole, even though there's big warning signs there, which are now I'm clear on, the big flashing lights going, don't walk in this hole. Don't act, let your pride and your defects go. Don't come in here. You don't do this. And I would invariably walk in there. But it would only take me 4 days to ask for help this time. And finally, at some point in my recovery, and I can never work out when this happened, and I actually saw the warning signs and walked around the hole or even turned around and walked away from the situation. And these are the gifts that we get in recovery, is to be able to go into the real world, into the world, and not feel less than, and have real purpose to why I get up in the morning. And purpose comes from centralizing the recovery in my life. If I put that at the, what is my life built on? It's built on these principles, these pillars in the recovery that I've actioned by following another alcoholic who's actioned them, who's followed other alcoholics who have managed to somehow write it down. And it is that simple. It really is. Now, I know that everybody has their favorite kind of readings and such, you know, and for me, I'm a basic text person. I love that it's called the basic text because I'm a basic alcoholic. And I've always loved the forwards, and the forward to the first edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says, you know, to show, let me just get to the right page. It starts off with the forward to the very first edition. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women. And this was in 1939, and it was written. And that's how it starts its chapter. And then I love the bit in 1955, when the second edition and the forward to the second edition, you know, it says, in this brief space, Alcoholics Anonymous has mushroomed into nearly 6,000 groups, where membership is far above 150,000. And then to the edition that I've got, which was written in 1976. When this edition went to print, the total worldwide membership of Alcoholics Anonymous was conservatively estimated at more than 1 million, with over 28,000 groups meeting in over 19 countries. And it ends with this. It goes, in spite of the great increase in the size and the span of the fellowship, at its core remains the simple and personal. Each day, everywhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope. And for me, these have been the favorite readings of the basic text. It starts by us talking to each other. And that's the start of the journey of recovery. And I have never seen anything like what I see in a desperate alcoholic coming into these rooms, and I start to talk to them for the first time, and they hear an alcoholic talking about how they got out from under. It is a powerful thing, and there is nobody else in this world that can do that. Only we can do that. Other people, as every other speaker has mentioned, has screamed and shouted at us. We had our will, somehow protecting this thing, this illness that is trying to destroy us, has destroyed us. We understand that. We understand the fear of going forward without drink and the fear of continuing with drink. We understand that. And by talking to each other, that's how simple it is. We talk to each other. There's a solution. It's written down. It's in basic text for basic alcoholics. And I'm proud to be a basic alcoholic. And I'm proud to know every single member of this Plymouth Road to Recovery group and to have seen your journeys. And for you to have seen my journey has been an honor and a privilege. And if you're new, talk to one of us. Talk to us. Just one alcoholic talking to another, sharing their experience, their strength, and their hope. And I'll leave it there. Thank you.